Welcome to Torah Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel, Chapter 13. In the last perek, we saw the renewal of the kingship in Gilgal, the final transition of the yoke of leadership from Shmuel to Shaul. The entire nation, having validated Shmuel's leadership and testified to his extraordinary commitment to the people, that he was a leader characterized by his giving nature, who led with unstinting love, now accepted as one body the kingship of Shaul, and committed to following the word of Hashem so as to ensure the success of his kingdom. Our parak today opens with a pasuk that defies literal translation. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Ben Shana Shaul b'malcho, Ushtei Shanim Malach al Yisrael, which would literally mean Shaul was 1 year old when he became king, and he ruled over Israel for 2 years. So the difficulty is obvious, and the commentators offer a variety of solutions. Rashi offers two possible explanations. First, he quotes the opinion of Chazal expressed in the Gemara in Masechet Yuma 22b, that upon being anointed as king, Shaul was kiven shana, as if he were 1 year old, shelo ta'am ta'am chet, as innocent as a 1 year old who had never tasted sin. The Alshich HaKadosh, based on another Gemara, explains this as a cause and effect relationship between the two statements in the verse. Because Shaul was innocent of sin when he became king, his rule lasted only 2 years and did not endure. He cites the continuation of the Gemara, that as a general principle, we only appoint leaders who have some flaw in their background, what we might call a skeleton in their closet, which is a deterrent to arrogance. Since Shaul's background was impeccable, he was vulnerable to sin, and his kingship did not endure. According to Rashi's second explanation, the text should be read as introductory to our chapter. The events described wherein occurred during the first year of Shaul's reign, and then parenthetically, the verse just concludes with, he ruled for 2 years. Alternatively, Radak suggests that this verse is referring to the previous chapter. Shaul had reigned for 1 year after his initial anointment, followed by the renewal of the coronation in Gilgal, after which he reigned for another 2 years. Following Rashi's second suggestion, in the first year of Shaul's reign, Shaul set up his army. Pasuk Bet, verse 2, Vayivchar lo Shaul, Shloshet alafim mi Yisrael, Vayihiyu im Shaul alpayim b'michmas ubehar betel, ve'elef hayu im Yonatan b'givat binyamin, ve'yeter ha'am shilach ish le'ohalav. Shaul chose 3,000 troops from Israel. 2,000 were with him at Michmas and Har Beit El, while 1,000 were under Yonatan's command at Givat Binyamin, and the remainder Shaul sent home. Malbim explains the relatively small number of troops by saying that this was intended to be a peacetime army, since in the first year of his reign, a king is like a new bridegroom who remains at home and builds his relationship with the people. But this idyllic plan was disrupted by an act of provocation. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayach Yonatan et Netziv Plishtim Asher Begeva, Vayishmeu Plishtim, Vishaul Takaba Shofar Bechol Haaretz Lemor, Yishmeu Ha'ivrim. Yonatan smote the Plishti governor in Geva, and the Plishtim heard. Shaul had the shofar blown throughout the land, saying, let the Jewish people hear. And the Jewish people heard the announcement that Shaul had slain the Plishti commander, and the Plishtim had become disgusted by Yisrael, and the people were summoned to Gilgal to follow Shaul. Did Yonatan act independently or with his father's knowledge? So Malbim argues the former, that Yonatan acted impetuously, shelo midat aviv, without his father's knowledge, forcing his father's hand so that he had to gather those whom he had sent home to face the war that would now ensue. Da'at Sofrim argues that Yonatan would never have overridden his father's authority, and he suggests that he must have been provoked by some sudden argument or threat by the Plishti commissioner, and the fact that there is now a king in Israel empowered him to react forcibly rather than back down as he might have done under the temporary rule of the Shoftim. In any event, Shaul is forced to take the lead, as he bears ultimate responsibility for the army and he gathers the people for war. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Uplishtim ne'esfu lehilachem im Yisrael, 30,000 rechev v'sheshet alafim parashim, ve'am kachol asher al sfat hayam larov, v'ya'alu v'yachanu b'michmas kidmat bet aven. The Plishtim gathered to fight against Israel, amassing 30,000 chariots, 6,000 cavalry, and soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And they ascended and camped at Michmas, east of Beit Aven. This huge army attests to the fact that the Plishtim were still impacted by their experience with the Aron, and were somewhat nervous about facing the Jews in battle. The number of soldiers was vastly disproportionate to that of the Jews, and the Plishtim were well aware that their army was superior not only in number, but also in terms of ammunition, for we will see later in the parak that the Plishtim had outlawed blacksmiths in Israel, and there were no iron weapons to be found in the entire country. When the people of Israel saw how outnumbered they were, they felt threatened and began to hide in caves among the crevices and rocks, in tunnels and pits. Some even crossed the Yarden to the land of God and the Gilad, while Shaul remained in Gilgal with all his men trembling behind him. Vayochel shivat yamim lamoed, asher Shmuel velova Shmuel haGilgal, vayafetz ha'am me'alav. Shaul waited the 7 days that Shmuel had designated, but Shmuel did not arrive, and the people began to disperse. Pasuk Tet, verse 9, Vayomer Shaul, hagishu elai ha'olav ha'shlamim. Vaya'al ha'ola, and Shaul instructed, bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. Vayhi kechalotol la'alot ha'ola, vihine Shmuel ba, vayetze Shaul lekrato levarcho. And just then, as Shaul finished offering the burnt offering, Shmuel suddenly arrived, and Shaul went out to greet him. Before Shaul had the chance to say anything, Shmuel said, Vayomer Shmuel, me'asita? What have you done? With the Ola burning in the background, it's clear that what Shmuel is really asking for is an explanation, but phrases it as, what have you done, to give Shaul a chance to confess and say, I was wrong. I should have waited for you as instructed before bringing the sacrifice. This is reminiscent of Hashem's approach to Adam HaRishon after he sinned, the first man, when he was hiding, and Hashem asked him, where are you? Even though he obviously knew the answer, but the question was designed to open a conversation, to give Adam a chance to give a full accounting. Unfortunately, Shaul had not absorbed that lesson, and rather than confessing, began to offer excuses for his behavior, including trying to shift the blame onto others, much as Adam had tried to shift the blame onto his wife. Vayomer Shaul, ki ra'iti ki nafatz ha'am me'alai, ve'ata lo vata l'moed hayamim, uflishtim ne'esafim michmas. I saw that the nation was beginning to disperse, and you had not arrived at the appointed time, and the Plishtim were gathering for battle at Michmas. I thought to myself, now the Plishtim are going to descend upon us, and I have not yet sought Hashem's help through prayer and offerings. So I strengthened myself and offered the burnt offering. The language of the Pasuk, Va'et apak, va'aleha ola, is unusual, and literally it means, I held myself back. Mahari Kara explains that Shaul means that he had already held himself back for several hours, waiting for Shmuel. But when Shmuel failed to appear, and the people were becoming restless and anxious and even beginning to leave, he felt that he had no choice but to offer the sacrifice himself. Rashi, followed by the majority of other commentators, explains that Shaul was implying that he behaved against his own better judgment. I held myself back from acting in accordance with my own will, which really was to wait for you, but I suppressed my judgment in order to please the people, who had become impatient. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, Niskalta, lo shamarta et mitzvat Hashem elokecha asher tzivach, ki ata hechin Hashem et mamlachtecha el Yisrael ad olam. Shmuel said to Shaul, you have acted foolishly. You did not observe the command of Hashem, who would have established your dynasty forever. Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14, Ve'ata mamlachtecha lo takum. Bikesh Hashem lo ish kilvavo. Vayitzaveu Hashem linagid alamo ki lo shamarta et asher tzivcha Hashem. And now your kingdom will not endure. Hashem will seek out a man after his own heart, and will charge him as ruler over his nation, for you have not observed that which Hashem commanded you. Malbim explains, you thought you were acting wisely, coming up with all these rationales to excuse your behavior, when all Hashem wants is simple obedience to his will. You failed the very first test of loyalty that Hashem set for you. Moreover, your behavior demonstrates a lack of bitachon, a lack of faith in Hashem. For you have shown that you expected the war to be fought according to the laws of nature. If you were really secure in your faith, it wouldn't matter how many soldiers had dispersed and how many remained. The consequence is a natural outcome of the sin. Since Shaul demonstrated a lack of firmness in the face of the people's anxiety, he has shown that he is not fit to be king. Pasuk Tedvav, verse 15, Vayakam Shmuel, Vaya'al min ha-Gilgal, Givat Binyamin. Vayifkod Shaul et ha'am ha-nimtzi'im imo, kishesh meot ish. Shmuel arose and went up from Gilgal to Givat Binyamin. And Shaul counted the men who remained with him, who numbered around 600 men. These are the remnants of the 3,000 who had been selected at the beginning of the parak, and who had been augmented by others who had joined when they received Shaul's call. The remaining psukim provide us with background information as the stage is set for the battle between the forces of the Plishtim and Shaul. First, the Plishtim, who had amassed a huge military force, divided into three divisions, one headed for the Ofra road leading to the land of Shu'al, one headed for Beit Horon road, and the third headed for the frontier, overlooking the valley of the Tzvo'im towards the desert. Further background is now clarified with regard to the sorry state of ammunition in the army of Shaul. At that time, the Pasuk tells us, there was no blacksmith to be found anywhere in Israel. For under Plishti rule, the Plishtim had forbidden smithies from operating within the borders of Israel. Even farm implements had to be brought to the land of the Plishtim to be sharpened. Therefore, on the day when they were preparing to battle, not a single sword nor spear was to be found for the soldiers of Shaul and Yonatan. Only Shaul and Yonatan themselves had weapons. So as the parak concludes, we now have a diminished force of 300 weaponless foot soldiers led by Shaul and Yonatan, preparing to face 30,000 chariots, 6,000 cavalry, and well-armed foot soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And the Plishtim set out towards the Michmas Pass. Just as a note, sort of addendum to this parak and introduction to the next parak, the places, many of the places mentioned in these two prakim, today's parak and tomorrow's, which is the continuation of this story, are to be found in the territory of Binyamin, known as the Binyamin region today. If you take Route 1, traveling northeast out of Yerushalayim towards Yam HaMelech, towards the Dead Sea, after you pass Ma'ale Adumim, you'll start to see turnoffs for many of the places that are mentioned in these prakim. Thank you for learning together. Le'ilui nishmot imhotenu hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer alea ha'shalom, and Sarah Schenker alea ha'shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.